Hello. Welcome to Marooned on Mars with Matt and Hillary, except Matt isn't here. It's just me, Hillary, walking around in my apartment on the really squeaky floor. So Matt did a great, interim episode of the podcast last week while I was away at a conference. And now I feel some pressure to record something myself. I'm a little worried, though, if I start talking and it's just me, I'm just going to talk and talk and talk forever. Okay, so I'm going to try not to do that. So I thought I would just do basically the same thing that Matt did, which is to talk about a couple of recent science fictional things that have crossed my path. First big, second endorsement, if that's the right thing to say, to, watching Lizzie Borden's Born in Flames, which Matt talked about. It is an amazing movie, and I think it's like pleasurable and weird and beautiful. And I think it actually, in the way in which it's thinking about change and what doesn't change and the conditions of change, and actually what it looks like to sort of mobilize for change, to take, direct action, et cetera. In that way, I think it's actually very relevant to a lot of the stuff that we've talked about with the Mars trilogy so far, except that unlike the Mars trilogy, it's trying to get you to think about, particularly about race and gender and sexuality and intimacy. I think the Mars trilogy actually wants you to think a bit about intimacy too, and how much those things are not sort of separable, but have to be part of a revolutionary project or revolutionary socialist project. Anyway, that makes the movie, I think, sound like way more dull than it actually is. Matt and I taught that movie together a few years ago. We screened it for our students. This is like 5 or 6 years ago. And it's a movie that I've loved. I saw it when I was in college, and it's one of my favorite movies. Like Born in Flames and Alien are probably my two favorite movies. And when Matt and I screened it, our students seemed like they didn't know what to make of it. We had kind of a discussion afterwards, but I had this sort of pervasive, this feeling that they just like didn't, they couldn't hook into it, and it made me feel depressed. And I'm sure it made Matt feel depressed, but that's because he always feels depressed. Just kidding. So then last year, I screened Born in Flames again last spring for my feminist science fiction class, along with my friend Bill in his techno relations class, which is basically about like affect, relationality, and technology. So we screened it for our students together. And I do think this has a lot to do with the way in which thinking about socialism and activism and political change and political struggle has just come much more to the forefront of the minds of young people. But we had an amazing conversation about the film afterwards with that set of students who were college and graduate students, and like a really interesting array and mix of people. And anyway, it made me so happy that that it turned out that Born in Flames is just as amazing and transformative a film as I had always thought that it was. So that's like my hopeful note. Okay, so totally seconding that. As Matt said, I was away at a conference. It was the Society for Literature, Science, and the Arts. When I first went to this conference in the 90s with a paper about Francis Bacon's The New Atlantis, the conference was called the Society for Literature and Science. I don't know when they added the arts in, but the big plus is it means that the acronym for the conference, SLSA, can be said SALSA, which I think is really nice. Anyway, it's a really great conference. It's an interesting mix of academics who do science and technology studies, people in the environmental humanities, people who work on literature and science intersections, people who work on science fiction, but also a lot of people who are actually quite hard to place in terms of the kind of work that they do. Not everybody who goes is a humanist. There are people more from the social sciences side of things. I saw amazing panels on like kind of queer environmentalism stuff, a really great panel on automation and gender that included two scholars, one named Melissa Gregg, who actually works for Intel, who does a lot of stuff on automation and work and gender, and a woman named Sarah Sharma, who teaches, I think, media studies at University of Toronto, who gave this amazing paper on what she called the feminism of broken machines, which was sort of trying to think about how, you know, you can have a kind of feminist praxis and theory that rather than needing to place itself against technology can kind of take up the technological, but in some ways take up the technological as part of a project of refusal or resistance. I'm not doing it justice. Anyway, she was like amazing and extremely funny and a really charismatic speaker. So it was a really good conference. My paper was about Octavia Butler's Patternist series, which is the first series of novels that Butler published. It's a 5-book series. And I don't know, I'm a big... Now you never need to be an evangelist for Octavia Butler anymore because most people, or you know, at least in the circles I talk about science fiction in, most people love Octavia Butler. But I think this series, the Patternist series, is a really like brilliant and has been talked about not often enough as a really significant series of science fiction novels. And I won't like go into like detail about that, but I would say, if you're looking for something to read, the Patternist series is amazing. The first novel, which was her first published novel, is called Pattern Master. And it is actually not a book that I particularly like. I don't think it's a very likable book. It's a like far future in which you have, I don't know, the society is like super hierarchical, kind of quasi-feudal, people are enslaved, you have a very complicated set of sort of basically kind of racialized distinctions between social groups, and the elite, engage in kind of mental battles, mental telepathic battles. So it reads a lot like a lot of kind of more, 1950s-y treatments of telepathic powers where, telepathic powers are about specialness and like either like leave you stigmatized, they maybe leave you stigmatized or they leave you more powerful than other people, but either way they mark you out as like special. Pattern Master, I think when you read it at first, it feels, Octavia Butler, she's a black science fiction writer who's famous for writing these really like critical, complicated accounts of like race and gender and sex. If you know that about her, reading this, her first novel just feels like, what? Well, I can't believe that this is a novel by this person who I've heard about. But if you start from there and then go into the series, and here I'm kind of recommending reading the novels, they get they've been repackaged now and called, rather than Patternist, called Seed to Harvest. And the repackaging puts the series in the order of the internal chronology of the series, not the original publication order. But I think the series is much better if you read it in the publication order. And so from that first book is not, again, super interesting on its own, but in the context of the series, which will include, like, the next book is set in Los Angeles, in a working-class black community. It has this kind of, like, almost a realist texture to a lot of it. And again, it's about, like, telepathy. And it's set in the current moment, so... 1970s LA. So the whole series like moves around in these really dizzying ways, moves around temporally in these really dizzying ways. And also throughout the course of the series, Butler takes up like all of these SF subgenres. So alternate history or occluded history, kind of the ruined earth, the near, the sort of like apocalyptic moment, ruined earth moment, She takes up a whole bunch of different kinds of like ideas about psi powers, which I think is really fascinating. And uses them to actually, I think, produce this kind of extraordinary sort of counter account of, I don't know, something like the history and the afterlife of the enslavement of African people in the American context. Like, that's, I think, what the novels kind of turn out to be about. But they also include a whole strain of thinking about, like, alien invasion and genetic mutation. Anyway, they're amazing. And I think that, you know, if you're something that you might be drawn to in the Mars trilogy is the kind of scope that those novels give you for thinking intensely about history and about our own relationship to history, as well as like the places where history becomes personal to us. And those Butler novels, the Paternus novels, are deeply, deeply about that. Anyway, strongly recommend them. Don't recommend my paper on them. Strongly recommend reading the novels. I was going to mention two other things just quickly. So I'm about two-thirds of the way through a brand new novel by Claire Coleman called Terra Nullius is what it's called. So I think this is a first novel by Coleman, who is an Australian Aboriginal writer. So she's, you know, an Indigenous person from Australia. You know, the first novel that has a lot of like blurbs on it that are comparing it to like Le Guin and Butler might make you nervous. That always makes me a little nervous, because I think it would be nice if people were allowed to just have their first novels just be good and not have to be off the chartsy. But this is a really interesting book. I'm not finished it yet, and I'm not sure, you know, I feel like you can always think differently about a book when you get to the end. But it ties in actually quite well to one of the things that we talked about, particularly when we were talking about Red Mars, which is how to think about the sort of resonances with settler colonialism in the story of quote unquote colonizing a place where there is no life, right? And you know, something that's so interesting about by the time you get to Blue Mars is actually like the problem of colonization, of settler colonialism, and settler colonialism in the form that's driven by corporations, like in Green Mars, I think already that has become like a serious part of the problematic of the novels. Anyway, so in Coleman's novel, we get a juxtaposition between a group of people who are referred to as natives and a group of people who are referred to as settlers. And the scenario seems to be, although you know from the outset that this is an SF novel, so you know that this can't exactly be the story. But at the outset, the scene seems to be settler colonialism. And also, it seems to be settler colonialism in roughly related to the way in which settler colonialism took place in Australia, the relationship between the British and the Indigenous people, the Aboriginal people of Australia. But again, like as you read it, you know, okay, this can't quite be what the story is. And there are very subtle things sort of woven in that I think for a science fiction reader, I mean, maybe not for a like literary fiction reader, but for a science fiction reader, there are signs that you know, you must be reading the scene wrong. And I'm not going to spoil it by saying what the scenario actually turns out to be. But it's actually not exactly what I had guessed. And I think by the time the book starts, you know, allowing itself to tell you more about what the world is that you're looking at, it becomes really rich. I mean, it's an intense indictment of settler colonialism and of the racism that goes along with it. But it starts getting quite complicated, and there are aspects to the writing that I totally, so in the kind of the way in which it's trying to think, I actually do see the comparison to Octavia Butler. And there are parts of the writing, like not consistently throughout, but there are parts of the writing that do have a little kind of Le Guin-ness. I mean, a kind of beautiful, a beautiful precision to them, you know, real sort of an ability to, in relatively simple language, evoke something quite powerful. Anyway, I'm really enjoying it so far, and I think it seems like, I don't know, maybe the last like 50 pages are going to make it seem disastrous, but I kind of think it's going to be worth reading. Okay, and I'm almost done here, but the last thing I was going to say is, so next quarter at the university, I'm going to be teaching a class called Futures Other Than Ours, which is going to be about the kind of conceptions that we have about the future now, or the sort of ideas about what the future is or what our relationship to it should be, that are sort of available to us under our particular conditions of neoliberal capitalism. And then sort of positing science fiction as a way to think about futurity differently. And mostly we're going to be reading, you know, kind of post-1968 SF. I mean, we're definitely going to read The Dispossessed, greatest science fiction novel of all time. And, you know, a few other novels. And I'm still working on the finding a bunch of short stories that I'm going to include. So if any of you have ideas for SF stories about the future, or that you would want to posit as about the future in one way or another, I'd love to hear that. You know, particularly things that feel like this is, you know, helps you think about kinds of futurity that don't seem readily available to us in our everyday moment. Yeah, and as I'm getting, as I'm thinking about what I'm going to teach in that class, heading into making the syllabus, I'm rereading Nova by Samuel Delaney, which is one of Delaney's, I think it's from 68, so it's like toward the end of the period of kind of Delaney's first period of writing, when he's writing this in this more kind of like pulpy vein, and before he has become as explicit about race and sexuality and sex. I mean, it's definitely before he's become as explicit about sex as he is in his novels of the 70s, in which, you know, they're just explicitly queer novels and also full of explicit sex. But Nova is sort of is a 1960s novel, and it's this kind of far future, like colonization of the Galaxy novel, and it includes, because it's Delaney, I mean, there's nothing explicitly queer in it, but the whole thing feels quite queer in a variety of ways. It includes, like, scenes of tarot reading, great, like, evocations of, like, subcultural practices. It's really, like, such a, I think I'm probably not going to get to teach it next quarter because it's a little too long, but just, you know, it's reminding me of what is so awesome about Samuel Delaney. So I just wanted to say, like, hey, there's another one if you're looking for books to read, which probably you aren't. But if you are, there's another one. Okay, so Matt said I should not fail to remind everybody that if you want to get in touch with us, I guess you could tweet at us. that would be so alarming. I just imagine there's like a sound that happens. Okay, or you can email us. That's MaroonedOnMars.com/podcast, I think, at gmail.com. It should really have checked on that. Or you can leave us a voice message on the Anchor app. And that way we hear your voices, and it's not just you hearing our voices. Okay, so now I'm going to do some cooking for Thanksgiving. I'm going to roast some carrots and parsnips with miso. Matt responded to that idea with contempt, but I think it's going to be really, really good. And then tomorrow I'm going to Milwaukee with my mom and my sister to see some cousins and probably not talk about science fiction. Okay, there you go. Talk to you soon. Yeah, we're going to record a new episode, hopefully next week, either on Red Moon or a kind of wrap-up of Green Mars, and then we will launch ourselves off into Blue Mars, which is going to be so awesome. Okay, thanks for listening. Bye.